It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I look like a delivery guy. I got this purple hat in the mail yesterday.
You're matchy.
And I got a purple shirt I'm seeing on the video now, and I look like I work somewhere. The purple shirt, I look like I should be driving a truck.
It's Mike Shope.
Like Grimace.
Right.
Oh, Grimace doesn't wear a purple hat.
No, but
in fairness to Grimace,
there's a lot of purple.
And the Bulldog.
I mean, I don't think I'm shaped entirely that similar to Grimace.
That's right. That's
fair. It's closer than I'd like, and the clothes could get you there.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I'm not body shaming Grimace. I'm just saying, you know, they're a big thing.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
I'm not sure we really got to the bottom of that.
I have not worn that hat since.
I don't know.
I have not worn the purple hat one time. I've worn purple shirts since, but that hat is on the shelf
for
now. It shook me.
Double purple.
But I was that ignorant to what I was going to look like ultimately. It took the cameras being on for me to go, oh my God, I look ridiculous.
Well, you know, you were the last to realize that.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't see a lot of people between home and here, thankfully.
Dare I say it.
Right.
With us now, this is a real treat, on the Western Hotline is Tom Telesco. This is kind of funny. I was driving from Louisville back home to Buffalo on Sunday and heard Tom and his co-host on the NFL channel, Channel 88 on Sirius. And then we were reminded that WGR is going to Sirius, Channel 175, if you can get it, or the app. And, Tom, we both got, like, this list of personalities and, like, pick three guys. You know, there's Stephen A. Smith. There's, you know, some giants in radio. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm a fantasy player. Give me the fantasy guys and then Gord Stellick. And Bulldog's like, didn't you just tell me Tom Telesco was on the radio and he was great? And so that
here we are.
That did happen. And it's, you know, been an idea of mine and ours for many years to look you up with your background and your experience in the league. Here we are together. Thanks for your time.
Well, I'll tell you what, guys, you can't use the same sentence, legends of radio and myself in the same sentence. That just doesn't work. But I'll tell you what, I've worked in the NFL for 31 years as a general manager for 12, but you've never really made it until you make an appearance with Shop and the Bulldog. So thanks for having me on.
Well, I mean, you're a Buffalo guy. I mean, I wonder if the Super Bowl, we're roughly the same age. Just kidding. Bulldog is older, but you know, I was in college for the Super Bowl Bills teams, as were you. And you were then interning, if I'm correct, in the summer?
I was. I was a summer intern. Correct.
What's the story?
You know, it was like luck and happenstance. You know, I was in college. I was playing football at John Carroll University. I'd gone to St. Francis High School, where Bill Polian was, at the time, he was the general manager, and his sons went to St. Francis.
Right.
And honestly, they just needed some college football players to intern in training camp. And this is before I even thought about having any thoughts of working in the NFL. I just did it as a summer job. I thought it'd be fun. I was from Buffalo. I was a big Bills fan, obviously. And I thought I could learn some things to be a better player in college. So I did it for 3 summers. And, you know, lucky enough for me, this kind of led into a job with the Carolina Panthers when Bill Polian went to Carolina. And my career kind of took off from there.
Tom, what did you do as an intern, mostly?
Oh my gosh. It's all the, like, all the grunt work. So it wasn't a whole lot of real football work other than maybe typing out some scripts. The receiver coach was Charlie Joyner, and I worked with the receiver. So it was like setting up practice, making sure he had what he needed for practice. You know, this is right at the beginning of computers. So it was kind of like typing out his practice script, you know, driving players to the airport when they're released. That's a real fun job. So I'll tell you that, guys. Driving players to get x-rays, MRIs. Just all that sort of, all the kind of football operations work that kind of goes in a training camp.
You mentioned getting to Carolina, kind of following Bill Polian there. Is that when the idea of this becoming a career for you really started to percolate for you, or did it take a little more to make it really get some traction for you?
I'll tell you what, at that time, you know, I was a huge, you know, football fan, but I just didn't really have any thoughts of or having thoughts there were opportunities to work in the NFL. So even when I went down to Carolina, I was going down there as a temporary, just work for the summer, and we'll see what happens after that. And I just really I've been on a team every year of my life since I was probably 8 years old. So I graduated from college. I'm working in the summer for the Carolina Panthers, kind of really enjoying just being a part of a team again. And then the summer ended, and no one told me to go home. So I just kept coming into work every day with the Panthers like I was a full-time employee, which I was not. I was just like a part-time hourly employee. And then kind of ended up in the scouting department. And just kind of took off from there.
There's a great lesson in that. don't leave unless you're sure that you have to. Just like, you know, Watergate, they had that committee bulldog. You're big on this. The Archibald Cox team, and then he was fired, and the rest of the staff that was doing all the investigative work weren't told, like, whether they had to be, whether they had, they were fired too. So they just hung around and, like, let's just keep working. And it paid off.
If I was interested in like 30% of the stuff that you accuse me of being interested in, I would never have time to sleep.
Well, anyway, that's pretty much a true story. With us is Tom Telesco from St. Francis, Buffalo. He was the general manager of the Chargers for 10, 11 years, then the Raiders. And you can hear Tom on SiriusXM NFL Radio Channel 88. You can find us on the SiriusXM app. SiriusXM.com/SportsPass for more details on how to subscribe. So these bills, Tom, like here we are every day. Bulldog and I have been sitting in these same chairs for 23 years. We're like, what is it, Statler and Waldorf from The Muppet Show or something. Like all these years talking about the bills. And then here comes Josh Allen with Sean McDermott and they get good. And it's been really fun. But now they're kind of entering historical territory as a team that has been this good but hasn't broken through yet, even to make the Super Bowl. How do you see it? When you size up like the last 8 or 9 years of them, I mean, what do you come up with?
Yeah, well, you're talking about 7 straight years of double-digit wins. And when you look at where the organization was before Sean McDermott got there and where it is, you know, when he left, I mean, it is improved leaps and bounds right now. And obviously, they're one of the best teams in the AFC. But the expectations are high. And usually in the situations, the same thing with Jesse Minter in Baltimore, with Joe Brady in Buffalo, when you take over a playoff caliber team, expectations are high, patience is low. You know, there's no honeymoon. So he knows what he's there to do, and it's to get the team to the Super Bowl, kind of get him over the hump. So, you know, to me, as long as you have Josh Allen, which they do, they're always going to be in the mix. But, you know, I've been bullish on the Bills for a number of years. I like how they're built on both sides of the ball. The one thing that gets overlooked a lot with the Bills is their offensive line has been really good, really consistent, which is why their offense has been as consistent as it has been. I know, obviously, Josh Allen is one of the best players in the league, hands down. But it's a really good offensive line, and they run the ball strong with James Cook. And then they can obviously make a lot of plays in the passing game. It's even better now with DJ Moore in the mix. So, but obviously expectations are very high for this football team for where they are and why they made the change of head coach.
Tom, I don't disagree with any of that. I just want to ask you, how fair do you think it is for Jesse Minter and Joe Brady to have those kinds of expectations, not only taking over a team for the first time, but like first time ever being a head coach, certainly at this level anyway. Like it seems like a lot. I mean, I don't disagree with those expectations, but I'm the whole time here, the whole off season, it's kind of like, man, there's a lot of stuff you got to get a lid on and get a handle on. And I just wonder if it's, you know, a lot to ask to just hit the ground running and go win 12 or 13 games.
Well, Bulldog, professional sports is not fair. That's just the way that it is. And he's taking over a really good football team. But it's going to be a transition for Joe Brady. It's just natural. It's his first time being a head coach. When I was with the Chargers, we'd interviewed Joe Brady for the head coaching job a number of years ago. He was really impressive at that time. Probably wasn't quite ready. He had just gotten into the NFL from college. But you could tell he just has some really unique characteristics with his personality, with his enthusiasm for the game, the X's and O's, obviously, but he really connects well with people. So I was impressed with him back then, so it's no surprise he became a head coach down the road with the Bills. But it's going to be a transition because now, you know, going from offensive coordinator to head coach, there's just a lot of things on his plate. You know, now it's clock management for both sides of the ball. It's fourth down decisions. It's managing a lot of personalities during the week. You know, you have all the practice structure, and there's a lot of communicating with a lot of people across the organization, including with the GM. They didn't have to do as the offensive coordinator. So there's going to be some learning curve for him. But I think he's a really smart, bright guy with a really good way with people. And you know, I'm expecting big things for the Bills this year.
With Tom Telesco, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here on WGR. Tom joins us on the Wester Hotline. You know, I just want to ask this question to that answer. That like so 2013 is when you take over as the GM of the Chargers, if I'm correct. And man, clock management, fourth downs, the points you were just making, I think it's maybe a lot different even than then. with respect to like what a head coach has to juggle. I mean, we hear Ryan Paganetti, I've gotten to know, was with the Eagles. Like, you hear about teams with staffs. Sean McDermott would talk pretty openly about it, Tom. Like, a group of people who are helping, if not actually even making some of those decisions for the head coach. That probably wasn't true in even as recently as, you know, 13 years ago.
Yeah, it has changed a little bit, you know, in 2013. And look, I worked with, you know, I had four head coaches that I worked with, and all four were first-time head coaches, so they all had to kind of get used to the job, on the job. But the game management part of it has taken such a big change, you know, in the last, you know, 10 to 15 years. And all these head coaches, they have help upstairs to help them make help them make decisions, and then have some data behind it. Now, the data just kind of gives you some context of how to make a decision, but doesn't make the decision for you. But it's needed because there's so many, you know, professional football, probably really any professional sport, team by team, the talent level is pretty equal. So you got to try and find the edges somewhere. And a lot of the edges in the NFL is in the game management, as far as you're going to handle the clock. And it's not just fourth down decisions, but it's how you're going to handle the clock, game planning on offense and defense of what you're going to run against the team that you're playing. But certainly game management is such a big part of being that head coach. So when you're the offensive coordinator and the head coach, there's just a lot in your mind and a lot working, but he's got a really good staff around him to kind of help him make those decisions.
Do you find, or in your experience, were coaches for the most part reluctant to surrender that sort of control, if you will, or did they welcome it because it was maybe not, you know, in short, how they got the job they had?
It certainly welcomed it. It certainly wasn't surrendering control, because in the end, they have to make the decision. But you're taking in the information from other people on your staff. It's no different than a general manager on draft day or during free agency. You're taking in a lot of information from a lot of people and then making a decision. It's not just a one-man show. So as the head coach, you're on the sidelines. They wear headsets for a reason, so they can talk with their coaches that are on the bench and upstairs. Now, you don't want too many voices in your head. But the coaches I've been around just welcome the information, because you can't make good, solid, educated decisions without good information.
Nice. Tom, while we're here, you mentioned that while you were with the Chargers, you had four first-time head coaches, recognizing that every guy would probably be different and have different strengths and weaknesses. Is there any common thread that runs through those experiences with those coaches that, like, the pitfalls, like the things that maybe you're not ready for when you become the head coach of an NFL team for the first time?
Yeah, well, it was three first-time head coaches with the Chargers and then one with the Raiders.
Okay.
But my first year with the Chargers, I was a first-time GM. Mike McCoy was the first-time head coach. So we were both swimming initially. But then after that, essentially, it's a big help for the GM to kind of help the head coach with all the things that's going to come to his plate, and kind of give him some information to, you know, hey, anticipate what's going to come up. And it could be anything from, you know, league rules, working with the league office. This is a lot of things that as you move from a coordinator to head coach that you didn't anticipate was going to be on your plate. So I think that's part of the GM's job to kind of help walk them through that. I think that was one of the reasons why I was hired in Las Vegas in the first place, because they were planning on staying with Antonio Pierce as the first-time GM. And I had a lot of experience in the NFL to kind of help him through, give him some guardrails, give him some advice and guidance of the things he's going to encounter. And I'm sure Brandon Bean will go through the same thing with Joe Brady. Now, he's been with Joe Brady before, so they already have a good relationship. But that'll be kind of Brandon's job, too, to kind of help the new head coach kind of get through this first season.
With Tom Telesco, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, 2013 Chargers draft is kind of an interesting draft. That would have been your first. There's Manti Te'o, and there's Keenan Allen, who is still playing. So what are your particular memories of, like, that weekend?
Oh, man, it was a blur, I can tell you that. I mean, your first time as a general manager, and you're in the draft room, and you're in charge of making the decisions, and everybody's staring at you. So I remember walking in there thinking, I wonder if I'll ever draft a player that makes a Pro Bowl. I wonder if it will ever happen. And lo and behold, our first draft, we drafted Keenan Allen. It's funny, just, you know, quick story. We didn't have a great football team, which is why there was a new head coach and GM there, but we had a really good receiver group. And my anticipation was I wasn't going to add to that receiver group in the draft. And we're in the third round, and we had a really high grade on Keenan Allen, and really wasn't looking that way. And I had our director of player personnel say, hey, look, you know, what about taking Keenan here? I'm like, well, he's probably going to have to redshirt this year. He's probably not going to have a whole lot of play time and probably won't dress, but we can still take him. So we took him, and then lo and behold, going into that season, we had one receiver get hurt in the offseason program. We had one receiver really not perform the way we thought he'd perform. And another receiver got hurt in September. Keenan Allen goes in there and he wins rookie of the year, his rookie year, and then goes on. He's the all-time leading receiver in Charger history. So it was a great learning point, at least for me too, to make sure you're not always just drafting for need. You got to make sure you take the best player available. And that was one of those that we hit on.
Nice. Third round pick, Keenan Allen in 2013. You know, Tom, so thinking about that point about drafting for need versus best player available, it feels like to me, it sounds like to me, maybe the pendulum has shifted more toward, this is perhaps just from the outside, but analytics and everything else, so sophisticated, a market this all is that drafting for need per se is not optimal, that you want best player available, figure the rest out. It's probably not as simple as that, but do you find that that's changed at all in the last decade?
Not for me. I mean, the hope is always that one of the best players available on your board also lines up with a position of need. That's what you always hope for. When I would go into a draft, we had many needs in the draft, so I never ranked needs. I never said, hey, look, you know, our corners are number one need and, you know, tackles are second need. I never looked at it like that. I just figured, all right, we have seven or eight needs. They all have to be filled one way or another. So I don't care where we fill it from, but we have to fill them. So that way, when you go into the draft, you weren't reaching down the draft board. Now, we've all made mistakes. You know, it's just part of the process. You only get, as far as free agency in the draft, those are the two big chances that really add to your football team. But I try to be as objective as possible as we set the board, that we can go to the best player available and we'll not have to go down too far on the board. But, you know, it's kind of, you know, you learn by trial and error too. But I was lucky. I worked, you know, with Bill Polian for almost 20 years. So just by osmosis, you learn a lot from watching how he handled the draft, and he's in the Hall of Fame for a reason. So that was his philosophy, and I used to try and follow it as much as I could.
Tom, if you don't mind, in the time that we've got left, spinning forward here and sort of looking at the lay of the land, especially in the AFC here, it strikes me as we've been winding our way through the offseason and we're almost to the openers now next week, that the field of contenders, like for, I don't know, since the Bills arrived as a contending level team, I'd say in 2020, when Josh Allen really blasted off, it's been Buffalo, Kansas City, Baltimore, sort of like the big three in the AFC. And now, like, we've got New England won the division last year and made it to the conference championship. Denver was the one seed. You've got the Chargers looking very threatening now. Maybe the Bengals will be back. It feels like there's, I don't know, seven or eight teams in the AFC you could maybe make a case for as being a bona fide contender. And I feel like that's a departure from the previous 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, I think it's strong, like you said, about seven or eight deep. And then, you know, we didn't even mention Jacksonville, who won 13 games last year. That's the one, even when I'm on the radio, on NFL radio, we tend to forget that. You know, they had 13 wins last year. And as good as Houston is, I think Houston is definitely a Super Bowl contender. Houston didn't even win the division. Jacksonville did. So, but yeah, you're looking at Buffalo. Obviously, New England is strong. Their offense is really good. Drake May is outstanding. And I think the A.J. Brown signing is going to help their offense even more. But you're looking at New England and the Bills division. The AFC North, I'm not sure yet. Cincinnati, they should be better. On paper, they should be better on defense, and that's all that they need. But we'll see if that comes to fruition or not. I think the Steelers, even though they're an older team, I think they have a really talented roster. So if Aaron Rodgers can stay healthy, I think they're going to be, you know, I think they're going to be a good team. Baltimore, I think, should be strong. So that's three really strong teams in the AFC North. Houston, I think, is really good. I mean, their defense is outstanding. You guys will see that, you know, early in the season.
Yep.
Definitely one of the best defenses in the league. And if Houston's offensive line can just play sufficient football, I think they'll score points. So they're going to be a tough out. And then, you know, to me, the Denver Broncos are the best team in the AFC West. I thought they were last year, and then they had 14 wins and lost their quarterback in the playoffs. So I think Denver, you know, to me, Denver, Houston, Buffalo, those are the top three as we go into the season. But, you know, we all talk about this in the summer and we look at it on paper and then things tend to change once they start playing games. But to me, those are the three top teams in that conference.
Wasn't blowing smoke when I said I thought you were good on Sunday, by the way, on NFL. Like, I don't know if I would say legend. I'm not going to try to, you know, overdo it here, Tom.
No, but for real.
I thought
Tom,
he was great.
We can be jerks. I mean, we've been in the profession a long time and we can judge harshly. people that we listen doing jobs that are similar to our jobs.
I usually do.
And he walked in here just raving about you. And I was like, well, all right, well, it must have been really good.
It's a 9-hour drive. And it was a 2-hour show, and then they played it right back, Tom.
I'm an unemployed football guy. So it's like you work 30 years in the NFL. I have all this information in my head. I have nothing to do with it anymore. So other than going on NFL radio and, you know, I help out with the high school football team here, like I got to have an outlet somewhere to talk about football. And as a GM, you have to do a lot of interviews. You have to do a lot of media work just as part of your job. But this is a great outlet for me to get a chance to talk football with you guys and just give my thoughts and opinions. And then I'll get off the air and you guys will kind of rip through my opinions and tell me what I do know, what I don't know. But that's the great part of this medium is just talking ball.
Is it something you aspire to? Like Sean McDermott, who was let go here, I think maybe has dabbled a little bit. Around the draft, we saw Sean a couple times on Rich Eisen and different things. Like, I think he wants to get back into coaching. I mean, we don't, you know, text or anything, but, you know, maybe you take a break and you find a lot of guys. It's interesting to me, guys who have left coaching, not thinking of GMs as much, but certain, like, really highly accomplished coaches find, of course, media wants them. Bill Cowher, Jimmy Johnson, media wants them. And sometimes they just stay there. I mean, it's probably a pretty good gig, right? I mean, you don't.
Yeah, I mean, it gives you a chance to stay involved without having the time and the pressure of a head coaching job. And those jobs are hard on you mentally and physically. So it keeps you in the game. But like, you know, for me, you know, I do enjoy doing this. I like talking football. You know, I do miss like being a part of a team, which I'd always been a part of. You know, trying to, you know, wins and losses and everything that goes on with that and working with a group of people, leading a group of people. I always enjoyed that. And I get a little bit of that working at the high school, at least I get on the field a couple days a week. But look, you know, I've been to football all my life. I love talking football. So will I do this forever? I don't know. But I certainly enjoy it right now.
Where are you involved in high school football? Is that in Cleveland? Wikipedia says you're an advisor for the Browns.
So I live in Southern California. I live in Los Angeles, okay. and I help out at Corona Del Mar High School where my sons play. They're no longer there. But it gives me a chance to just get on the grass a couple days a week. We have a game tonight, actually, big game tonight. So
good luck.
But, yeah, I love high school football. I love being around the kids. I love being around their staff and, you know, kind of keeps me going a little bit.
St. Francis and Bennett, I believe, on Saturday. I would have asked you more St. Francis questions, but my son's at Canisius, so. We just are contractually obligated not to do that. But I think that's the first game, St. Francis and Bennett. Canisius and Health Sciences Bulldog, big one.
Ooh, that Health Sciences
this weekend.
Team is
they are good.
They're a bear.
Don't even joke about it. They are good. All right, Tom, thanks for your time. I mean, any questions for us? Not to be rude here.
Just, go Red Raiders.
Go Red Raiders tonight. Can we watch that game anywhere? Probably not, but we'll look into the the results tomorrow.
That was for Jerry Smith in St. Francis High School.
Right.
All right. Thank you, Tom. Hope to talk again someday.
All right, guys, anytime. Thanks for having me on.
Tom Telesco on the West Shore Hotline. Yeah, of course, the Red Raiders. See, again, that's sort of like, I pushed that off.
Yo, you were, you know.
I don't want to talk about them.
You got the thing you want to read at the end here, probably.
Polian Family Field.
Or I can do it. Tom Telesco can be heard on Sirius XM NFL Radio Channel 88. Also, you can now listen to us here on WGR wherever you go on the Sirius XM app. Check out SiriusXM.com/SportsPass for more details on how to subscribe to Sirius XM's all-new sports plan.
Crusaders is what he wanted there. Not Red Raiders. He wanted Crusaders. Canisius. That's what he wanted.
No, I think he wanted St. Francis.
No, I do too, but I think maybe it should have been.
But you thought he was talking about his California team.
I mistakenly did for a second, but of course. See, again, like blind spot.
Mm-hmm. What is the nickname of the Health and Sciences?
I don't know. Health Sciences? I don't know, but they're good. Like, that's going to be. That's a showdown game this Saturday. They're both pretty good. I think.
Good deal.
I mean, I'm not, who do I want? Who's the expert?
Does Health Sciences have a
Dick
guy
Gallagher?
That's been recruited to Syracuse?
Who do I want?
They probably do.
Okay. They might have a few of those. I don't know. All right. That was cool. Tom Telesco. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog here at 803-0550. This is WGR.
If you look at Josh Allen over the last, really, six times they've been in a playoff. The last six playoff losses, he has 14 touchdowns to one interception. Mm-hmm. He has a QBR of 88. He's only taken six sacks and 237 dropbacks. They lost three consecutive times by 3 points or fewer. Where should the scrutiny be? defense.
Yeah.
Can we get a stop? Can Josh Allen play defense? Because if he can't, that's where the scrutiny should be. To me, Josh Allen has done enough to win a Super Bowl, to get them to a Super Bowl. The defense has been the one that's let him down.
All right, you want to play with that? Jordan Rodgers. That's one for you. That's a question for you.
I mean, there's just no nuance to, you know, that's how it is. I know that's how it is. I think I probably at times treat subjects the same way. That there's just this or that, and there's no, I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, you know where I stand. I don't know how prepared I am to run through the whole speech because it's all, I feel like now that McDermott's gone, it's all sort of, it's past, you know?
Ooh, interesting.
The idea that, you know, judging the one versus the other, but I don't know. I have felt all along that I've got the ball with a minute to go, a minute and a half to go, and a chance to win the game. Like that's time for the championship quarterback to go win the game. I don't care how bad the game was up to that point. You're there. You're down by three or four. Put it in the end zone, and we go home and party. I know it's not that easy, and there are certainly, you know, there have been bad beats for Allen. I mean, 13 seconds quintessentially is not in this category, but I don't know. Like, what do you want to do with last year? Like, I know Denver scored, what did they score, 33 points to
33.
Beat you? 33 points. But, like, the 10 of those points easily were gift-wrapped by turnovers, one at the end of the half that was particularly egregious. And, like, look, I'm not here to draw and quarter Josh Allen for all of that either, but this narrative is just, it's fatiguing, I think, because it's fundamentally at its ground floor. It's, of course, it's that other guy's fault. I don't have his jersey. I don't, like, he's not here to save me. And Josh Allen has saved us. I mean, he has brought us so much fun and excitement and entertainment all wrapped into one. I mean, it's been the best run. I mean, I started in 95. The 90s Bills were over. That's still a long time ago. But between then and now, I mean, this current iteration of the team, the Josh Allen Bills, no longer the Sean McDermott Bills, have been a joyride. So I'm not, like, I don't want to be mad at him. And he does do a lot. But I think in those moments, I would say he hasn't come through some of the time.
Well, you talk about nuance or whatever, trying to fill out the point. This analyst mentions interceptions. He lost two fumbles against Denver.
Right.
Two picks, two.
Four of
he
the
fumbled three times against Denver.
Four of the turnovers in that game were him. Cook had had another one. So, like, again, you know, maybe part of it is, like, you know how people listen to what they're hearing and they're just going to hear bits and pieces of it. And, like, I never want to be the guy that's killing Josh Allen. Like, I'm not Nick Wright or anything. I don't know. Like, it's people that just, you know, are in this to just, you know, take shots and get reactions and, like, you know, live the life. I mean, good for you. I don't want to always be banging on this, but it's just, I'm fatigued by it because I don't think I don't know what exactly is right. I just do believe that saying the defense is the reason they haven't been to the Super Bowl yet, I don't entirely agree with. I think it gives Allen a pass. I think it gives Allen too much of a pass for mistakes and or just, you know, misses. I guess those are mistakes too. You know, that it just doesn't sit quite right with me.
You know, for me, just like when it comes to coaching stuff, I mean, okay, so he fumbled three times against Denver and threw two interceptions. I can't really put myself in his shoes and imagine, like, would I have not fumbled? Like, just... It happens, of course, turnovers are a death knell, and okay. The one moment where I want to, if I'm going to ride with you and put the playoff history on him, it's Kansas City at home. That's the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's the last two offensive plays of that game. And the second one isn't really like so much on Allen because he's flushed out. If you remember how that game ended, and he throws it away on that play. It's the play before. There's a timeout. And you have all that time to – it's Brady, too. You have all that time to figure out what to do. What are they down?
They're down three. They're trying to tie it with the field goal, ultimately.
They're down three. They're in control of that game, the Kansas City home game. The team you would rather be is Buffalo.
I think that's a game, considering who you're playing, and it's the divisional round of the playoffs, and you're playing – I don't know if the Chiefs were the defending champs that year or not, but whatever. You're playing the Super Bowl Chiefs here, and I've got the ball in field goal territory, and I need a touchdown to beat you. Like, that, to me, is winning time for the future Hall of Fame MVP quarterback. Like, that's it. It's time to go do that.
And if he comes over the top of you like he did in 13 seconds, Mahomes, then okay. But
right. Which could have happened, you know, like the way that all unfolded. Because I know somebody out there is listening to us, because there's always a, yeah, but what about, right? Denver, Brandon Cooks catches that ball. Allen completes the comeback from all of the mistakes, and they win the game. And they're playing next week in New England in the AFC Championship game.
Yep.
So I know, like, that's not Allen's fault. He puts that ball right where it needed to be, or, like, close enough anyway. I mean, Cooks has it's a catch. It should be a catch.
And he has to slow down.
And it wasn't. Yeah, that's right. He did. And that brought the defender into the play. But still, like, it's a long throw, and to me, it's...
It's good. It's not perfect.
It's in the landing area. You know what I mean? Like, it's not at the pin, but it's, like, safely on the green, and you're putting for birdie. But nonetheless, there's that. And in this Chief example, the first play of that drive, there's 8 minutes left when they get the ball back after the Hardman touchback, right? After Hardman fumbles at the goal line and they get the ball back, there's like 8 minutes to go. And they bled the clock brilliantly. I think it's 8 minutes. I might be exaggerating a little, but there's a lot of time left. That first play is the bomb to Diggs.
This is, again, the home playoff game against the Chiefs.
The home playoff game against the Chiefs. Diggs, and that's where Diggs does the thing with the index finger and the thumb, like, oh, this close, right? The ball was right there. If he catches that and the defender falls, they score, we probably have a 13 seconds type situation on our hands.
Well, you have half the fourth quarter left.
Right, because there's going to be 7.5 minutes left or more after he makes – if that goes all the way. And, I mean, 13 seconds, Tyreek Hill took the lead back with a minute left, and then Allen came back again. So you might have still been trading punches there for, you know, a little while. You wouldn't have been home free. I think actually you would prefer. I mean, do I want the touchdown that I never got that gives them the lead with half of the fourth quarter to go? Sure, but your preference, I think, should be to run the clock down and not give them a chance.
Well,
which is a part of your problem with that second to last play.
Yes, I think I would say that play. Down three, 2 minute warning, 2nd and 9 at the Chief 26 is my least favorite play of his in his career.
He goes for Shakir in the end zone,
which isn't there.
It's there.
Well, anything's.
He's open. I mean, he misses the throw, because,
but he gets hit.
Yeah, Dawkins gets pushed back, I think, by Chris Jones, and it affects the throw, and it's off target.
Fair enough.
But it's there. I mean, that's the Gabe Davis touchdown in the 13 seconds game, or one of them. It's there.
But half of my problem is that's still too much time.
Exactly, right. You want Diggs on the crossover.
I don't want the touchdown.
Right.
I want to run the game out and then score the touchdown, which Allen has done numerous times. Like, that's been part of his brilliance. Is there was a win in Baltimore the one year where they took it all the way down and then end up, they had a game like this against Miami, if I remember right. They kneel out the fourth quarter to kick the winning field goal. So this only would have tied it. I'm not playing for the field goal. I'm not saying that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about managing the clock there, and he couldn't help himself, which is really as... you know, relative as criticism of Josh Allen is in his career, is like the top of the list.
Right.
Is just the temptation of the big play. And they had time to and maybe this is as much on coaches as it is on him, but, you know, he's the guy with the ball. They had time to figure out that a touchdown on the first play was not really the best case scenario.
Mm-hmm.
you know, if it's wide open and it's a walk-in, maybe then we're talking about whether Kansas City gave it to him. But that wasn't the case. I mean, it was not that. I just want to go underneath. Diggs is walking across the formation, you know, alone. The Chiefs gave them that. The Chiefs didn't know well enough. The Chiefs should have given him a touchdown. Should have covered Diggs, not Shakir.
I can't say it was a gift, but I'm remembering Shakir much more open than you seem to be.
No, okay.
On the play.
I'll pull back on like it wasn't there.
But
I don't even really want it.
It still wasn't optimal. I don't disagree with that. It's always made sense. Like, you just keep I don't remember what the timeout situations were or whatever.
They had two left.
The Chiefs did.
The Bills did.
Or the Bills. I'm wondering about the Chiefs.
The Chiefs also had two left.
Do I want to make them burn those if I can, right? I'm coming out of the two-minute warning.
Right.
I keep the ball. I keep it in play. I'm not going out of bounds. Like, all of these things that you want to have buttoned up to finally slay this monster that you've had so much trouble slaying. And, none of it turned out to be optimal.
All right. Why are we talking about this?
Because somebody on TV said the defense is why the Bills haven't been to the Super Bowl yet.
Yeah, like, four turnovers against Denver are not at the top of my list of, like, I wish I could have this back when it comes to Allen. It's that. It's Kansas City when they had him at home. And that, like Denver, you're talking about how the mistakes, they took the lead in Denver. And they went to overtime with the ball. Like, they definitely had chances.
They got a stop in overtime.
Yes.
That's what, you know,
to win the game.
Oh, the defense, they can't. Okay, they got you the ball back in overtime.
Yes.
I mean, what more at that point in the game, what more can I do? Oh, but then they got driven on after that. Okay. That's right. A bunch of penalties and like whatever. It's just it's it feels good a little. There's like adrenaline
every once in a while
right now that I'm feeling, but ultimately it just all feels kind of, you know, all said and played out.
Take the car out of the garage, you drive it around the island, and then you put it back in, and then we'll talk again next year.
Right. Maybe you try to jack it up and put it in reverse to take the miles off, like Cameron in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And maybe the car goes.
What is this movie?
Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Please, for the love of Christ, tell me you know what I'm talking about.
How old a movie is this?
All right, we got to go to break. Let's just take a break.
Yes, I know Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Good one. Good job.
There's a Jim Florentine prank call where he and his partner pretend not to know that movie, and the telemarketer goes in on it, and they're like, "What? Really? That sounds hilarious." That was the instinct I had right there. Embarrassing. Paul Hamilton at 5. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.